Today on the Travel Guys.
In the travel news, the mouse who jumped out of a passenger's meal, causing a flight diversion on an international route, has filed a complaint against the airline for not refunding the second half of the mouse's round-trip ticket.
Okay.
And things are changing at Southwest. We have some details.
In our Smarter Traveler segment at 11:25, we're going to address two important subjects, passport renewal by mail and a reminder about taking pictures of your rental car.
The Galapagos Islands are on the bucket list of many travelers. Earlier this month, a group of sports leisure travelers made the journey, and their leader, Michael Downer, joins us to share their experience cruising in the Galapagos Islands at 11:35.
Terror tourism, as in Halloween, is growing in popularity, and at 11:50, we take you to some of America's scariest places to visit for the holiday.
Scaring you to death, taking you to one of the most beautiful places on Earth, and making you a smarter traveler. Just a typical week here on The Travel Guys.
On the road again.
Welcome, my friends. Welcome to another edition of the Travel and Entertainment Guys, always brought to you by Sports Leisure Vacations. Thanks for coming along. Here we are. It's been 7 days, Mark, since we jumped on the radio to make people smarter travelers. What's been going on with you and Sports Leisure?
Hey, not a whole lot. I spent my week in town, by and large, but we took a group of sports leisure travelers to a very historic event on Thursday in the Bay Area. I, unfortunately, was not able to go, which somewhat broke my heart. The last home game of the Oakland A's was Thursday, wrapping up more than a half a century of their home in Oakland. And, of course, the A's are driving down the road, or up the road, or whatever you prefer, to Sacramento to play for the next 3 years while they wait for a hopeful stadium in Las Vegas. And, Tom, I thought about something last night. I'm laying in bed, and, you know, I'm trying to go to sleep, and all this stuff is racing through my head. And I get onto the baseball subject, and it dawns on me. What happens if the A's come to Sacramento, and they are incredibly successful? What happens if they make, like, the playoffs? Or heaven forbid, what if the Sacramento A's, or the Athletics, as Major League Baseball is going to refer to them, happen to make it to a World Series? I mean, it's just a far out there dream, but wouldn't that be wild?
Yeah, that would be more than wild. I don't know. I mean, that would be, I have no idea. They must have some sort of a contingency. You can't enter a season thinking that, you know, you don't have a chance. You don't want to win. Don't have a place to play. All I can tell you is, if it happens, you think it costs a lot to go to a World Series game now?
Yeah,
you know,
yeah,
as few people as they can put in the park here in Sacramento.
Yeah.
Be outrageous.
Major League Baseball would probably pull some BS like playing the games in San Francisco or something like that.
Hey, yeah, let's just jump back to the Coliseum just for these games.
Yeah, just for these few games. I guess they had some problems at the Coliseum Thursday. They ran out of beer. The beer lines had air in them most of the day.
Oh,
it was hard for people to get an overpriced beer at the Coliseum. But by all rights, having talked to a couple people who went, and Tyler, who was their tour director, it was an electric atmosphere and a lot of fun. So if you were a baseball fan, you got to say goodbye to your A's. And Tyler said some A's fan saw the folks from Sacramento, was talking to them and said, well, you know, you guys are going to have our team next year, and they won't be in Oakland anymore. And then one of our people said, well, they're only 90 miles away. You can drive up the road and see them in Sacramento. And the person said, I don't want to go that far to see my team. And to which the sports leisure traveler told the lady, we've been driving to Oakland for 50 years. You can drive up the road for a couple of years. So,
yeah, there you go. Yeah, it's real easy to get spoiled when you have a major league team, you know, right there in your city and you don't have far to go. So, yeah, that was a good point. Good story, too.
Well, okay. Always, Yeah. Well, and all, the other thing, Tom, is that, you know, this has always been a Giants town. I mean, the Giant fans have never forgiven the A's for moving in and almost costing them the Giants a long time ago. So we'll see. I'm sure Sacramentans will warm to the A's, but we'll see if the Giants fans stand their ground. We'll know in about 6 months.
All right. Well, welcome to the Travel Guys here on a fine Saturday morning. And at the top of every Travel Guys radio program, we bring you up to date on the travel news. And with today's edition, once again, here's Mark Hoffman.
The FAA has been telling us since before COVID that they didn't have enough air traffic controllers. Appears as though that might be turning around. In 2024, they have made the highest number of new hires in over a decade. We're not completely through the year yet. It's part of the agency's efforts to minimize operational disruptions that have been affecting the nation's aviation industry due to the shortage of air traffic controllers. So they have hired over 1,800 air traffic controllers this year, brings the total number of people on the job looking over aircraft in our in control towers around the country to about 14,000. So some good news, at least temporarily, that because some smaller airports, they've had to move controllers around. They sent a whole bunch of them down to Philadelphia from New York a few weeks ago, which created some horrible delays in New York City for a couple of days. So they've been kind of trying to juggle things. So it's nice to hear, if you're a traveler, it's nice to hear that there are enough air traffic controllers to go around. Heaven forbid what would happen if there were not. Here are a couple of quick Southwest announcements. We're going to talk a little bit about more about them here. Iceland Air is partnering with Southwest Airlines. The details of that will be announced next year. You can also expect Southwest to announce partnerships with a couple of other international carriers. I don't think they're going to join one of the alliances, but I look for them to have transfer and baggage and co-op ticketing deals with more than just with just Iceland Air. Costco is repeating another special for Southwest Travel. You can get $500 worth of Southwest Travel for $450. This isn't available all the time. Costco makes it available from time to time, and they are out there now. There's a limit of 5 cards per Costco membership. But if you had a family that was going somewhere and you were a Costco member, it's a chance to save up to $250 on some travel on Southwest Airlines. And speaking of Southwest, they are cutting approximately 30% of their inter-island flights in Hawaii. Apparently, Southwest has had a hard time competing with Hawaiian Air on the inter-island flights in Hawaii. So they're cutting out some of their flying, which to me kind of seems a little bit backwards, because the more flights you cut out, the harder it's going to be for you to compete with other carriers. Also, one of the things that's about to start are red-eye flights on Southwest. They will be running from Phoenix and Las Vegas from Honolulu and Maui very soon. Those will be the first red-eyes that they're doing. Also, there will be Los Angeles to Baltimore. Those are going to be starting in the next few months. No Sacramento red-eyes yet, but I think that that's probably a reasonable possibility sometime in the foreseeable future. Southwest has also announced, reiterated that as they make some changes going forward next year, you're going to be, by the middle of the year, you're going to be able to reserve a seat on Southwest, or you can board without a reserve seat and not pay extra, but reserve seats will cost more. Southwest has reiterated that they are going to stick with the 2 free bags. That is not going to change anytime soon, but they're going to take a shot at some of this revenue that other carriers are making. So in some cases, it's going to cost you more to fly on Southwest Airlines. We were teasing at the top of the headlines about, you've all by now, I'm sure, heard the story about the live mouse. Right, Tom?
Oh yeah, the live mouse. Yeah. It really caused a. Well, why don't you tell them what it cost?
Well, it was a Scandinavian Airlines passenger who opened up her in-flight meal,
mm-hmm,
and a large mouse. Not a large mouse. It wasn't that big of a mouse, but and a live mouse scampered out.
Oh boy!
So that forced the plane to be diverted and make an emergency landing. Interestingly enough, you would think, you know, a mouse, well, that's, you know, I mean, obviously it scared people, and I can only imagine a mouse running around on an aircraft. What that would cause, I'm thinking back to the days of when a mouse ran through the kitchen in my house, and I heard a blood-curdling scream from my mother and went out into the kitchen to find that she was on the counter screaming, "Get that mouse! Get that mouse!" So yeah. For some people, mice are a problem. For airplanes, mice are a problem. Their droppings will corrode parts of the aircraft. Also, they love to chew on electrical wires, which can cause short circuits and create a fire risk. Mouse urine is corrosive to metal. And I can't pronounce the word of what is in their droppings, but it causes water corrosion. Even if Boeing finds a mouse in the hangar at Boeing, you can do some research online. I went down a rabbit hole with this. But if they find a mouse in a hangar, they shut the whole hangar down. The whole place has to be, because mice on airplanes are really, really a problem. So, wow. It sounds kind of funny, but then after you get into it a little bit, you find that, yeah, maybe not so much. All right, here, a couple of other travel
items. Wait a minute. We got to find out now. They had to turn the plane around, and did the mouse get a refund for his trip or anything?
Yeah, the mouse didn't get where it was going. So, no, they took the plane back and took it out of service and put the passengers on another flight. About a 7-hour delay because a lady opened her meal and found a mouse in it. Yipers. Amtrak has announced that while they are fixing some tunnels in New York, they have created a temporary route between Miami and Chicago. So for those of you that are train buffs, there is something going on right now that won't be there very long, and that is an Amtrak route between Chicago and Miami. And like I said, the only reason I mentioned this is because I know people who are fanatical about train travel, and if there was a temporary route that they could get on for a little while, my goodness, they would be all over it. And finally, one last item today. This is not good news for people who live on or like to travel sections of Highway 1. The very windy and dangerous coastal highway in California, you haven't been able to go up the entire coastal highway for almost, it'll be 2 years, the 1st of January. They had hoped to reopen the entire road at the first of the year, but that is not going to happen. So it's going to be pushed back to sometime in 2025. So if you're thinking about a trip on Highway 1, there is a piece of the road between south of Monterey that is not open and will not be open for a while. So before you plan a trip like that, and really and truly, if you've always dreamed of traveling Highway 1 either north or south of the Bay Area, it's not a road that you get any speed on or that you can get anywhere quickly. So make sure that if you plan some travel on that road when the southern section reopens or on the northern section, it is prone to rock slides and stuff like that. So you have to take it easy and you have to allow plenty of time to be able to get where you're going. Highway 1 not reopening. The southern section south of San Francisco and Big Sur is not going to reopen until sometime in 2025. And that's your travel news for today.
And we are the Travel Guys. Again, check us out at travelguysradio.com. Well, if you're like me and you're always looking for great value when dining out, you might check out my favorite restaurant, Rudy's Hideaway and Lobster House, as they have a limited time special, amazing petite filet mignon, paired with a petite lobster tail dinner, only $34.95. It's really quite the bang for your buck, with a hand-cut charbroiled petite filet mignon cooked just the way you like it, paired with a petite lobster tail with drawn butter and fresh lemon. Includes fresh asparagus and warm San Francisco sourdough bread. Rudy's Hideaway, My go-to for lunch Tuesdays through Friday, your dinner 7 nights a week. Get your tail to Rudy's Hideaway and Lobster House.
Oh, no.
Yeah, yeah, for their special. Highway 50 at Hazel, right there in Rancho Cordova. Or should I say here, because I'm here. All right. Coming up next in our Smarter Traveler segment, a couple of important subjects, passport renewals and pictures of your rental car. That's next here on The Travel Guys. Here to make you a smarter traveler every Saturday at 11 a.m. and at TravelGuysRadio.com, it's Mark Hoffman and Tom Romano. We are the Travel and Entertainment Guys. All right, let's get down to business in our Smarter Traveler segment. Mark, I'm going to start. Want to talk about those passport renewals first?
Sure. This is something we mentioned on the program a couple of weeks ago, and now the system is in place. And there is a link at TravelGuysRadio.com if you'd like to look into renewing your passport online. Now, remember, this is only for passport renewals. And if it's been too many years since your passport has expired, then you won't be eligible for this if you're under 25 years old. I can't imagine somebody renewing a passport who's under 25 since they're issued for 10 years, but I suppose that's possible. There are a few exceptions. And if you use the link at TravelGuysRadio.com, you can find out first if you're eligible, and then you'll have to set up an online account. But in the old days, you either had to go to an office, the old days being like yesterday, you had to go to an office or you had to send your passport in the mail with completed forms and all of that kind of jazz. In this case, you will be able to do it a renewal only now. Remember, you can't get a new passport. And there will be some restrictions for some folks who have special amendments to their passport and the like. They will probably still have to go in according to this online announcement. But a big, big hassle is eliminated for folks who have behaved themselves and are just regular citizens and just need to renew their passport. They can do it online. So that's pretty cool.
Absolutely. It's about time.
Yeah. Yes, it's about time. That will be the regular process. It'll be easier than the mail-in process. But if you need your passport renewed, you know, like in 3 days or five, you know, you've got a last minute emergency and you've got to leave the country for family or business, or you just forgot and you suddenly have realized, oh, my goodness, my passport needs to be renewed. Remember, there are many countries that you travel to where your passport has to be good for at least 6 months past your return date. So it's really important to know that piece of information. If you don't, then you just need to make sure your passport is always going to be good for at least 6 months after your return. But that's something, this online renewal, I think, will help a tremendous number of people. TravelGuysRadio.com is where you can find the renewal, so you can find out if you're eligible for an online renewal of your passport. Okay, second item here. Tom, we've talked before, more than once, about people taking pictures of their rental car
or
online.
Or forgetting to take pictures of their rental car online.
Exactly.
It can happen.
And I'm reminded our buddy Chris Elliott, who also writes from time to time for Travelers United, penned an article for them last week. And one of his readers wrote in, and Enterprise wanted to charge them for a missing head restraint in a rental vehicle. So, you know, that's a thing that you brace your head on as you're driving down the road. Well, apparently one of them was missing, and they wanted to charge her for it. But she had pictures of the car. And so she couldn't get the rental company to pay any attention to her. But eventually, when she got Chris Elliott's people involved, they got the rental car to listen, and she wasn't charged for it. But Chris points out that he still regularly gets emails from people who got a rental car. They didn't do the damage, but the rental car company is saying that they did. And what happens is, if you take pictures of the car, then on your phone, pictures are time dated. And they have a date stamp on them. So if there ever is any question of, you know, when did you tell, oh, you took that picture when you took the car out. So that's why it doesn't show the scratch on the fender. Well, no, you took the picture when you came back, and there was no scratch on the fender. So here, Avis, Hertz, Enterprise, etc. Now you can go, you know, pump logs or whatever, because I didn't do this, and now I can prove it. If you didn't take those pictures, then it becomes really a he said, she said, and you may end up, the lease thing is not being able to rent from that rental car company, perhaps having to pay for some damages that weren't your responsibility. So remember, just walk around the car. I take four pictures I straight out from each corner of the car. That way it gives me the sides and the bumpers and all that stuff. And then I take a picture of the dash, a picture of the seats in case, you know, a seat got slit or something like that. I could show that everything was fine. And if it's a something where there's a hatchback and a lot of carpet in the back, I will open the back and take a picture that way. All of this takes maybe 2 minutes, maybe. And I've only had one situation over the years where a car rental company has come back to me and said, hey, you owe us some money for something. And I said, no, I don't think so. I didn't do that. I have pictures to prove it. We went back and forth a couple times. They never even asked to see the pictures. So...
Well, quick question. You know, sure. back in the old days, you used to do the walk around with the person from the car rental. It was kind of like their thing, not yours.
Yes.
And then later on, you know, when they stopped doing that, I would go out and check the car in advance and do the picture thing too. But I would also, if I found something, I would drag them out to the car and say, you need to make a note here that this car has a dent that's bigger than a quarter at this location, and point out any flaws ahead of time. Is there any need to do that?
Well, yes. To your point, if you found a dent that the quarter is the gauge, is the guide. So if you go out to the car and you find a dent or a scratch or something like that of note, then yes, I would call it to the car rental company's attention. I actually would ask for a new car if that was possible, so there wouldn't be any confusion when you returned the car. But yes, it still is important to do a little bit of an inspection ahead of time. And as you point out, the car rental companies used to do it themselves when you took the car back, but they rarely do that anymore. So it's up to the renter to do that on their own and make sure that when the car is returned, you've got some proof on your telephone that says, hey, you know, the car, when the car went back, this is the condition it was in. So don't go pound sand. This is between you and somebody else. I don't have anything to do with it.
All right. Pounding sand. All right. Well, there's some great advice from the travel guys. Write that one down. All right. We're going to take a short time out. And when we return, off to one of the most beautiful places on the planet, we're going to meet up with Michael Downer, one of the leaders from Sports Leisure Vacations. We're off to the Galapagos Islands, my friends. Mark and Tom, the travel and entertainment guys, brought to you by Sports Leisure Vacations. Thanks for coming along. Remember, links to our special guests and lots more, always to make you a smarter traveler, can be found at travelguysradio.com. Mark, you've got one of your special people with you there today. We're going to talk about a really amazing trip that some Sports Leisure Vacationers just got back from. So tell us about it.
Michael Downer, who is a member of the staff at Sports Leisure Vacations, just took a group of people to a place that probably is on as many bucket lists, travel lists, as any place else on the planet, and that would be the Galapagos Islands. I asked Michael to come in today because they had a pretty successful trip. It's not an easy trip. There are some things about it that might be a little limiting for some folks, but it's a great destination, and so I thought we would talk a little bit about it today. Michael, welcome to the Travel Guys.
Well, thank you, Mark. Good to be here.
Michael, first of all, for those of our listeners who are geographically challenged, tell us a little bit where the Galapagos Islands are located.
The Galapagos Islands are located about 600 miles off the coast of Ecuador, South America. They're located, they straddle the equator.
And so why do you think the Galapagos Islands are on so many people's bucket lists?
Well, it's the most protected area in the world as far as wildlife. They don't allow any unsupervised tourists there. It is just very well protected. So the animal life you see, the indigenous animal life you see there, are not afraid of humans because they haven't had that much, you know, bad contact with humans. And they're just there, and you can just visit them on the islands. It's quite amazing.
Wow. So let's talk for a minute about getting to the Galapagos Islands. Just the journey to make the journey is a little bit arduous. Explain how you got there from Sacramento.
So Sacramento, we flew through Phoenix to Miami to Quito, Ecuador. We spent two nights in Quito, which is a beautiful colonial city. In fact, it's one of the just best colonial cities you'll ever see.
Really?
And then from Quito, we flew an hour and 45 minutes out to Baltra, which is on the islands, and we boarded a ship from there. Now, when I say boarded the ship, that really means we got off the airplane in a very much open-air airport, got on a bus to a Zodiac to the ship, and boarded the ship at that. Then we spent four nights on the ship sailing around the Western Galapagos.
Now, it's something interesting there that struck me. You got off the plane, you got on a bus, you went and you got on a Zodiac to get to the ship, a Zodiac boat we're talking about.
Correct. There are no docking facilities in the Galapagos for ships. Everything you do is off the ship, is on a Zodiac to the island and back to the island again. The infrastructure is very, very limited because they've kept the islands as natural as they possibly can.
Yeah, probably a good thing. So the Zodiacs, we talked about things that might limit some people from going on this particular type of an adventure. So getting in and out of a Zodiac requires some physical dexterity.
Absolutely it does. And there were some people on the trip that had some difficulty with it. And there were some people who were on the ship, not in our group, that also had difficulty in it. Remember, getting into the Zodiac, and then you got to get out of it again. And on the islands, about half the landings we did, and we did two landings a day, were what they call wet landings. So you get out of the Zodiac into the surf, probably ankle to knee deep. The surf is up against you. Things become a little bit slippery and a little bit hard. So you've got to be able to get in and out of the Zodiac and navigate through the water to the shore.
So there are people who will help you,
yes,
ship's crew, with that, but you have to be able on your own. If somebody had a really serious disability, then this is probably not a trip that they can physically make, just because there are some limitations. So you're on this ship, as we call it, out in the open ocean. How many passengers?
100 passengers on our ship. We were on the Galapagos Legend. There's probably only three or four ships that sail around there. I didn't see a single one in the time that we were there, other one. But 100 passengers. So when you go off the ship to go on the island, you're led by a naturalist, and you have to stay with that naturalist. You can't just wander off on your own, mm-hmm, because they want to protect the wildlife. And the great thing about the naturalist is they know pretty much everything you need to know about the animal and plant life on any given island that you're on.
Now, the Galapagos is not like going to some of the other popular island destinations on the planet. You don't get off of the Zodiac on one of the islands and go to the shops and restaurants and the ice cream parlor and a candy store.
No, you're not getting a Mai Tai with an umbrella in it. You are basically, there's really little or no infrastructure on the islands at all. There's one island, Santa Cruz, which has a town on it, but that's about the only one. It's just a natural state. Trails that you walk around.
Which perhaps explains why this is bucket list material for so many people. Give me one or two of the highlights of a couple places that you visited or things that stuck in your mind.
Okay, so, you know, they're not completely structured. You have a certain amount of time on the island. Now, we were getting off the ship one morning to go to the island to do a walk to look for marine iguanas. And the naturalist said to us as we got the Zodiac, we heard there's whales in the area right here. So we took off of the Zodiacs. We found two humpback whales with children just there in the ocean. And we got within about 30 or 40 feet of them.
Wow.
It was just amazing. And after that, we went to the island. We walked around. There were giant land tortoises. There were iguanas everywhere, marine iguanas, swimming iguanas, ocean ones, regular, you know, just land iguanas.
Things you wouldn't see in your backyard in Sacramento.
Things you wouldn't see in your backyard, absolutely.
You're listening to The Travel Guys, Mark Hoffman and Tom Romano. We're talking with Michael Downer of Sports Leisure Vacations, and we're talking specifically about an adventure to the Galapagos Islands. So if that's someplace that's on your bucket list, then we're addressing specifically something that you might be considering doing someday. Michael, because of the limitations of with the Zodiacs and stuff like this, and knowing that this is on the bucket list of a lot of mature travelers, do you have some wisdom maybe to share in terms of being a smarter traveler and making this trip?
Well, first off, I wouldn't hesitate at going. Go as soon as you can. I mean, as we get older, we get a little bit more limited in what we're able to do, and you need to be in good shape to do this. That would be my basic advice, is don't wait. Don't hesitate.
What was the average age of the travel? You mentioned that the folks getting in and out of the Zodiacs, that there were crew and people there to help them a little bit. What would you say the average age was of the 100 or so people on your boat?
Probably 60s and 70s.
Okay.
So they were more mature travelers.
Okay. So Galapagos, this wasn't an inexpensive trip, obviously, with three plane flights and a ship that only holds 100 people in a foreign country and the like. You were traveling with 20 some odd.
Right. There were 22 of us total.
Okay. From Sports Leisure Vacations. I haven't looked at the evaluations yet. Not knowing what people wrote down in writing, what would you say was the general feeling of your group after they completed the adventure?
I had many people tell me that this was a trip of a lifetime. This is something they'd wanted to do for many, many years, and they were so glad they were able to finally get to do it. And it actually exceeded the expectations they had of what they were going to see and what they were going to experience.
Is there a tip or two, if now having done this and been there, something that you would take with you that you didn't take, something that you took and didn't use at all, or some pearl of wisdom or two that you might share with people who might be thinking about a trip to the Galapagos Islands?
Make sure you have a good set of water shoes. Because during the water landings, some of the areas that you landed are sandy, some of them are not. And you need a good set of water shoes to get you off the Zodiac onto the beach.
Aha. Uh-huh.
And actually, some people had such nice pairs that they just walked around the islands wearing those same shoes. You could actually change to other shoes if you wanted to.
So a pair of water shoes.
You have to have one of those.
That's pretty important. Getting down there and getting back, what did it take you? Probably the better part of a 24-hour period,
yeah.
I'm guessing?
Yes, probably. Yeah, it did. Quito's not an easy place to get from Sacramento. Mm-hmm. We had a double connection both ways. But, you know, the airlines were, you know, the flights we were on were all on time. So, you know, you got to be prepared for a long journey.
Tom, any comments from your end?
Well, I was going to ask Michael about the wildlife that he saw, but he covered it pretty well. Were there any, you know, you mentioned it there, it's very protected, and you're there with somebody that's going to keep an eye on you. This isn't a situation where there's no feeding of the animals or any of that, right?
No, you're not allowed to interact with them. They ask you to stay 6 feet away from them.
Uh-huh.
And the naturalists make sure that you do. I mean, the last thing they want is for you to cause an issue with one of the animals that's there.
I'm guessing that maybe this is such a special place that it sort of makes people want to follow the rules.
Right, exactly.
You wouldn't want to be the guy that left the Cheetos bag in the cave at Carlsbad Caverns and created a bacteria growth.
Right. So, one of the islands that I was on, I found in the volcanic rocks right out of the ocean a couple of plastic water bottles.
Oh, my.
And I picked them up and I gave them to the naturalist to dispose of them. And he said that wasn't from people leaving them there. That was from tides.
Wow.
The tides had brought those in, and he thanked me very much for, you know, taking care of that.
The Galapagos Islands, if you have never been and you're thinking of going, it'll be probably a couple more years, probably every other year, is something Michael and I have talked about for Sports Leisure Vacations to make that excursion. But if it's something, a place that you want to go, you could give Michael a call, and I'm sure he would be happy to talk to you or Google it online. There are a number of private excursion companies, but just know that if the Galapagos Islands is on your wish list, as Michael said, consider doing it sooner rather than later, because the physicality of it is something that you'll need to be able to address.
You know, after spending time with Michael, I went onto my computer and looked up Galapagos Islands and Zodiacs and took a look at that and did my best to imagine myself taking this trip. And, you know, it sounds very, very exciting. It is definitely, I mean, it's a once-in-a-lifetime thing.
When Michael came back, I said, you know, maybe we should consider doing this more often. And he was like, yeah, he said, I had people on the tour. Well, you heard him say that said, you know, it was really the trip of a lifetime. So congratulations. Galapagos Islands, we have a link to general information. If you hit the link and scroll down, you'll find some companies that operate trips to the Galapagos, if that's your thing. All right, we're going to take a quick break. And then coming back, we're going to talk about some of the places that people like to visit for Halloween in these United States. We call it terror tourism. That's next on the Travel Guys.
Here every Saturday at 11 a.m. to make you a smarter traveler, Mark and Tom, the Travel and Entertainment Guys. Don't forget, if you miss the show live or just suits your schedule better, you can find podcasts at TravelGuysRadio.com, also at KFBK.com, and on the big one, on iHeartRadio. All right, let's get started here. We got a lot to cover here. All across the country looking for scary places.
Yeah. Have you ever, Tom, done, I mean, when you were a kid, you know, haunted houses or something like that, but as an adult, have you ever made a travel excursion specifically that was related to Halloween? I haven't.
Only locally. You know, I've never gone on the road. You know, I have read about things like this, and I think we're going to cover some here that I think people will find fascinating. But Sacramento has a plethora of great haunted houses and haunted events that will there's one right here in Rancho Cordova called the Heartstoppers Haunted House. It's right there off of Highway 50 where the mini golf place used to be. I've never been to that one because I prefer my heart to continue working. I don't need to be scared to death. But anyway, how about you? You've never. Let's talk about this. I think there are probably people listening that might find this somewhat intriguing.
I'm not a get scared out of me sort of person. So some people just really enjoy that. I you know, don't like to have to carry extra pair of underwear with me when I go places. So, but do you know, Tom, that Halloween related tourism is the fastest growing? It's still a very small segment of tourism here in these United States, but on a percentage basis, it is growing year over year over the last 10 years, if you forget the COVID years, faster than any other, than faster than Christmas or Thanksgiving or graduation or grandma's birthday or any other category. Halloween is the thing that really, and also it's mentioned here that Halloween has become a huge fundraiser for nonprofits because a lot of these haunted houses and other Halloween activities are put on by, and you know, haunted houses need human volunteers, or at least recently human volunteers. And so it becomes kind of an interactive people event. And I encourage you to support a local charity and get out and haunt. Some visit a haunted place this year. Salem, Massachusetts is the number one Halloween visitation place. On the average weekend day last year in October, Salem saw between 65,000 and 100,000 tourists. To give you an idea, on a typical weekend in Salem, there would be about 3,000 or 4,000 tourists. So between 65,000 and 100,000 tourists. May I make a suggestion? If you're planning your Halloween tourism haunts this year, I would suggest you go to Salem maybe like the week after Halloween or just sometime when it isn't Halloween. If the places are haunted, they're haunted year-round, so you don't have to necessarily be there at October. But one suggestion, I called and spoke to a tourism person in Salem that I know. and just asked her about this article that I was reading, and she said, oh, the place is a circus. She said, we have 4,000 public parking spots in Salem, and they're usually full by about 10:30 in the morning.
Wow.
And we run shuttle buses from the outside of town and all kinds of stuff. There are extra passenger ferries that come in. But anyways, I would just suggest to you that Salem, while being perhaps the most famous Halloween city in the country, might be a place that you might want to consider visiting at other times of the year. Of course, lots of people have ghost haunts and at Sports Leisure Vacations. I do a ghost tour in Nevada every couple of 3 years.
Yeah.
And visit Tonopah. And
you've met a few ghosts along the way.
I'm no longer – I would not put me in the category of skeptic anymore. I firmly believe that not everybody dies the same. And this has nothing to do with heaven or hell or afterlife or anything like that, but just that perhaps in passing, as my old buddy Robert used to say, maybe not everybody passes exactly the same. And I kind of would suggest that I've experienced some things on our ghost hunts that would suggest that perhaps he is right. So if you're going to Las Vegas, you can take a ghost hunt out to Good Springs. That's a paid attraction that you can go out there and they will teach you how to use the meters and what kind of questions to ask the ghosts and what type of ghosts you might find in Good Springs, Nevada, which is actually back towards the California state line. There are lots of haunted places in Nevada. Tom, you probably remember me mentioning in Tonopah, which is really one of the most haunted places in the country, if you believe the local folks. In the elevator there, they have a ghost in the elevator all the time at the Mitzpah Hotel. And the ghost in the elevator likes some of the people who work there and doesn't like others. They all get into the elevator, honest to God. Anytime an employee gets in the elevator at the Mitzpah, they say, "Hello, Walter," because that's the name of the ghost. And you look around and you say, "But there is nobody in the elevator. Why are you talking to people?" And so there you go. There's some great places in Nevada. Theme parks are known for having special Halloween thingies.
Oh, yeah.
Universal
Studios. I've been to the Disney Halloween thing a couple of two or three years, and it's big fun. However, the small children always beat me to the great candy first.
Oh, my goodness. Please don't bother the children on Halloween. America's Haunts is a place that does they have over 20 haunted attractions nationwide. They are in, California, Georgia, Kentucky, Louisiana, Maryland, Michigan, Minnesota, Missouri, New Hampshire, New York, and on and on and on. I didn't put a link up for this one, but America Haunts is the name of it. So I'm sure if you Google that, you will find a list of all of the places that they have around the country. As you mentioned, in addition to Universal Studios, Warner Brothers does a Halloween thing in Southern California. So if you are if you're looking for some place that's really haunted on Halloween, my suggestion to you is just go online and start searching around. And of course, folks who have a strong belief in ghosts and the like are very active on Halloween with seances and stuff like that. I suppose you could get into something. I'm not quite that ghostly of a person yet.
You know, Transylvania, I know we're talking about some big travel here. Transylvania, mm-hmm. Romania has hands down got to be one of the best places to celebrate Halloween, as the Dracula story, which is everywhere, has lived on for decades or centuries almost. And isn't there a Sleepy Hollow in New York?
Oh, yes. Yes. The legend of Rip Van Winkle and Sleepy Hollow and all of that jazz. Yeah. And a lot of these famous places, if you're looking for something to do on Halloween, many, many, many places have reenactments of exactly what you were talking about Sleepy Hollow or something like that. So this kind of divides into two categories: people who are really serious about their Halloween haunted houses and the like, and really want to be able to go someplace that, for fun. They don't mind somebody jumping out behind a door and scaring the bejesus out of them. And then there are people who are actually out searching for real ghosts on Halloween and other nights too. So you might what an interesting time to be out roaming around in places other than Salem, Massachusetts. Literally, the tourism lady told me, she said, if you're going to go on the radio, just tell folks that it's not really very Halloween-y here because we have so many people and we don't know what to do with them all. We don't have enough parking places. We don't have enough restaurants. The Halloween attractions don't have enough space as we get close to the date. So she said the town is just as haunted the day after Halloween as it is on Halloween night. So
well, all right. There you go. Well, it's just about a wrap, Mark. We're out of time.
Thanks for the warning, Tom. Thanks for joining us, folks. We'll be back next week. In the meantime, dance like nobody's watching.
Stay well, my friends. See you next week here with the Travel Guys.